minute.
This week on the House of Static, from Paris, France, singer, songwriter, producer, and multi-genre indie pioneer, Lisa Leland.
Okay, well, let's say this. As Kilo said, hello, this is the House of Static. I'm Bob Smith, the static part, Kilo House, the house part. And Kilo and I are musicians, and we like talking to other musicians about music and art and whatever it is they may be doing or thinking or life and whatnot. And today we have Lisa Leland, and if you'll tell me if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, Lisa, I just know it from writing it. So Lisa is a French musician who has, we'll get deep into her catalog and history in a little bit. Lisa's done a lot of music all around the world, really, not just in France. And it's pretty great stuff. Kilo and I were listening together actually earlier, and I'm familiar with Lisa's. Yeah. And if some of you may know that I have a music blog, I'm familiar with Lisa's music from that. And that's how we met.
I am now a big fan of her music. I love the new album, but we'll talk about that during the show.
So Lisa, say hello.
Well, hello. Bonjour. We're in France here. It's 9:30 in the morning.
Sounds good. Yeah. Sounds much easier. So
I'm a Spanish French artist. I used to live in the United States, lucky me. And here I am to talk with you guys about music and life, right?
Indeed, exactly. So, the most recent project that Lisa has done that brought her to my blog and now into this conversation is Lisa's most recent album, Glass of Blood, which is a really, really very cool fantastic album. Yeah, it's a really neat, really great album. And I've been lucky enough to be in communication with Lisa and her label a little bit over the last year, and I've gotten to listen to some of the stuff a little early and everything, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's just a great record. So so Lisa, our plan is to get into that and talk about the new record and everything, but maybe first a little about you, about your history and where
where did it start? What inspired you to start making music? Like, when did you start and what made you go, I want to make music and bang on things and sing and whatever?
Well, like a lot of people, I come from a music background. There was always music playing at my house with my parents and my brothers, but always live music. Big parties every week at my parents' house where my dad and his friends were all playing guitar, playing the piano, singing. I'm talking maybe 40 people playing music together until 3 in the morning in our living room. Then my brothers started a band when they were around 9 years old and starting playing shows and recording. And I was just listening to music as our main leisure activity at home. And one day, there's always this one day. I mean, there's two things. I started taking piano lessons, really liked the composer Bartok, if you know
him. Oh, Bartok, yes, right.
I really wanted to play his music. Then I went and my parents went and got me a piano teacher. And I asked her, oh, I really like this composer's music. Could I play it? And then I had to learn. And it wasn't as fun as I planned it to be. So I just wanted to bang on the piano. So in order for me to do that, I had to write my own music. So that's my first, that's my first door to composing is I want to play piano, but I don't want to learn. So I might as well.
That's amazing.
Yeah, my story is almost the same, except it was Bob Dylan instead of Bartok. So there you go.
That was when I was really a little kid. And then I went to a few shows. One of them, it's not very original, I'm sorry, but being Björk.
I love Björk.
I went to one of her shows, and for the first time, I felt like I didn't want to be in the public. I wanted to be on stage, and I wanted to do that. And I wanted my vocal cords to feel the way it seemed like hers were feeling, the way she was singing, it felt like really her whole being was being expressed. And I went home and it started. The whole thing started with me wanting to be more than just in the audience. I really wanted to write.
That's amazing.
That's very cool.
Yeah, Bjork's voice comes from another planet, I think. It's a very unique, you know, it's deep from her soul, I think.
It's very personal, dude. Yeah.
And I think that being Scandinavian, it struck a chord with me, which ended up being really one of the most important points of my writing. Is the first years of my music, I wrote only when I was in nature in Sweden. That's where I was inspired. It was a direct message from the forest to my writing. And I think maybe that's why it's this artist, because she wasn't the one I was listening to the most. I was listening to girls group. I was listening to hip hop music a lot. To techno music, but the writing came from this same feminine, in nature side of me, I think.
That's very cool. That's very cool.
So you said you also have lived in the United States, so I assume you've worked with artists all over the world. Can you kind of run through that with us?
Yeah. Actually, my brothers organized a music festival in Paris, a long time ago when I was in high school. And that's where they introduced me to a lot of American artists, such as Jeffrey Lewis, Kimia Dawson, John Darnielle from the Mountain Ghosts, Jason Molina. I met a whole lot of artists. John Darnielle.
I have
John helped me in my making music in the States later, because thanks to him, I recorded an album in California with part of his team, which was great. That's where I met a lot of people. And then I fled to New York for holidays and just never came back for a few years, and was performing there a lot and recording.
That's excellent.
That's awesome.
You know, Lisa, in that time there, you were mentioning a lot of the indie and anti-folk artists that you worked with. And in my notes, anyway, I have that you worked with Daniel Johnston. And is that true? Because that's cool.
Well, I never mention it myself because that's not what I consider working with. Actually, we were at the same residency/festival, and he was walking in the corridor, and he came to me and said, "I like your voice, little girl. Would you like to sing with me?"
Oh, well, that's excellent.
I'm very bad at impressions.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that was pretty good, I think, actually.
That's great.
That's when I ended singing a bit of a song with him and other artists.
Nice.
We recorded together a song with a lot of the artists that were there. Each one wrote a couple of verses of the song, and then we recorded all together.
That's great.
Most
people watching probably have no idea what we're talking about, but Daniel, excuse me.
Oh no.
Yeah, I'm dying.
We're all dying slowly. Don't worry.
All right, I'll edit that out. Anyway,
no.
So
no, he won't.
Some things out.
He's lying to you.
Anyway, the point being is that Daniel Johnston is like a real indie legend, to a handful of nerdy kids like me, who in the 80s was making my own little DIY, you know, demo tapes and such and sending them out to the world. And Daniel Johnston is sort of the king of that. Like he was kind of made more famous in the 90s when Kurt Cobain wore one of his t-shirts, but he was cool before that.
That's awesome. So
I digress.
let me ask you, do you still have to go into the forest to write music, or what's the difference between how you write music now and how you wrote music back then when you said you went into the forest and then it spoke through you, or however you put it? Do you still do that, or?
Well, the forest has grown into me, if I can say. There's enough shadows and nature and poetry inside my heart that I can write within myself, which when you're a young kid, maybe you haven't experienced the mysteries, the nighttime, the romance, your heart is not yet filled with that.
Right.
Now I have enough inside stories to write, even if I'd rather write in the forest. But what has changed a lot since the time I lived in the US and toured South America and Europe and everything is sedentarity. I used to write because I had a show that night and I wanted to tell my week's stories and I wanted to have new material. So a lot like I imagine a comedian does before doing a stand-up comedy. Right. When I had a show, I was writing 3 or 4 new songs that day just in order to perform them that night.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's cool.
And now it's more abstract. I can stay locked in the same room for a week and still have it's less of a storytelling process and more of a poetry and imagery work that I do now.
Well, how do you stay inspired with the whole sedentary lifestyle compared to, because if you're out in the world traveling, doing stuff, you have a million things, because what our fans might not know, you know, as artists, like, whatever we're inputting, which I've said this on the show many times, what we input is what we output. So she's saying she went from having a very insane lifestyle. We know what it feels like to tour and do that kind of stuff. So I understand that completely. How do you find inspiration in a locked room, you know, so to speak?
I guess always feeling like I don't belong. The less you belong, the less you're a bit uncomfortable. And that's a place of creation too. I really don't belong in a sedentary lifestyle. I have a good relationship with my kid, but when I drive him to school in the morning and have just to say hello to the other moms and stuff, I always feel socially awkward. And this place of social insecurity is kind of a travel in itself.
Then you internalize it. So they basically, the journey goes inside.
There's a lot of movement in being in a life that's so different to what you're used to. And it's inspiration enough for now, I guess.
Sometimes I think
when we're locked in.
Yeah, no, you're right though. I do think, and I think Bob will agree, on being uncomfortable sometimes is a good inspiration in itself. It's a good creational tool. If you can embrace that, you have to be willing to go, well, fuck this sucks. But, I mean, Bob can say from knowing my life, I've done that with my music a lot. So I think that your answer is spot on. Being uncomfortable is sometimes a great place to find inspiration.
Yeah, I agree. I hope so anyway, because I'm basically always uncomfortable. So,
welcome to the club.
That's exactly. Why your music socially is so badass, bro. And we're not telling anybody out there to go, like, sell your house to become an artist. Like, let's just be homeless so that I can make it, like all those people that made it from the bottom. Don't do that. Don't have to be uncomfortable, but you find yourself in that situation, you can still be creative.
Roll with it, right? It's cool, Lisa. One thing I was thinking about when you were talking about how your life has changed, and then, you know, and how you can find that sort of natural inspiration internally now instead of going out and walking out into the woods and things. One thing I was thinking about is your music you can hear a significant change in the style of music you've done over the years, right? You can, you know, you were doing some sort of, you know, kind of indie alternative electro pop for a while. And you did more like dream pop California sound stuff, you know, and it's very cool and very different than what you're doing now. So now, you know, your music today is very earthy, very, very natural sounding. It's very, you know, it sounds like a live band playing in a room.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's really a beautiful sound, a beautiful natural sound, the record. And I, you know, that kind of, I don't know, I guess that channeling of that sort of natural inspiration from yourself, from internally, I guess maybe you led to that, I guess. Tell us a little bit about that. How does that become this really beautiful, warm album that you've made?
Actually, the sounds of my previous albums was always determined by where I was geographically and the means I had. Usually, I arrived in a city, I had 6 hours to 2 days to record a whole album. whoever, whatever musician was willing to participate with me, we would get in a room and do what we had time and means to do in that little bubble of time. And so that's what determined the musical color of my album. If I was in Brazil, for instance, I arrived in Brazil, I needed a band. I got up on the counter, on the zinc at a bar and was like, is there a drummer in the room? Is there a bass player in the room? Two dudes came up, we recorded the next day. And that was the,
That's awesome.
And it was the same in New York. When I was in California, I recorded with my roommate, who was also my surf nanny. And in his... My surf nanny. Mm-hmm. Like, he would take me to surf spots in the morning and give me tips. And we were like, let's do a record. So it sounded like a surf record, because that's what we were doing together. So it was always like a chameleon style, because that's the guitars we had. That's the amps we had. That's what we were doing. And the last one, I actually had time and means, because I had a great record label that was like, what do you want to do? Right. And I felt like, well, I want to explore my own sounds and my own references. And I just want to write something that sounds like the music I've always had in my head. Mm-hmm. And we took time. Every single part of melody was researched and written, and we had a lot of time in the studio. The musicians lived in Paris, I lived in Paris, and we weren't limited by time or instruments. And that's why this record sounds different, but it's still, I guess it's the only time I had time to do it my way, the whole way.
Right. It just has such a, it's such a personal sound. It really, you know what I mean? It really does. You feel like you're hanging out with you the band listening to the music. It really just is a really beautiful, warm sound. I was listening to it today, and as I mentioned, I've listened to it previously, but you know, obviously we're coming to the interview today. So I was like, I could go back to that album. And I texted Kilo immediately, like, dude, you know, just start the album from the beginning. And we were both like hanging out, listening to it at the same time. Like, this is, you know, really
whoever the producer was did an amazing job of doing something I try to do, which we talked about this earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm the producer for Bob. So I do his records. I mix and master his stuff and do all that shit. And one thing I really appreciated about the organic nature and feel of the album was how each song felt cohesive, right? It didn't feel like you just recorded a bunch of songs randomly and said, I'm going to put this out as an album, which people do that. But it sounded very big budget, like professional studio, like for instance, the reverb that they use on most of the songs, in my opinion. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's a different reverb. Maybe I'm wrong. Whoever the producer is, comment in the video and tell me I'm wrong. But I really enjoyed how much.
At least it's the producer.
Oh, really?
There you go.
Are you kidding me right now? Nice to meet you. I love your work. Am I wrong? Is that a different reverb, or is it mainly the same reverb on each song?
You're not wrong. Actually, I'm the co-producer. It's a duo. It's me and my friend Guillaume L'Eglise. How French does this name sound?
That is wonderful.
Guillaume,
yes.
Which means Guillaume Church, which is funny. And so we work together. We did everything, the recordings, the mixing, the producing.
He's your guitar player as well, right?
Also my guitar player. Oh. We're like, he's my hands. Mm-hmm. He's my translator when there's a limit to my computer abilities. He's very gifted with that. We worked with a lot of, it's funny that you say it sounds like it was recorded in a professional studio, because a lot of the songs were even recorded on my bed, sorry.
That is,
I was 9 months pregnant and I couldn't even get out of the house. And I just had a mic and there was a guy coming, playing the violin in my bedroom recording with little mics. And I have this vocal microphone that I love and that I use all the time. And I'm pretty old school with the reverbs. It's true. I always use.
Sounds great.
I love using either Space Echo, or I have one or two tools that I liked. My drum machine is an 808 I bought when I was 16 years old, and it's always the same one.
That's amazing.
And the
an actual real like professional.
I'm floored, but at least it's honestly my and our sound from start to finish. Because
coming from someone who literally gets paid to mix and master and make an album sound like an album, which we're working on an album right now,
right.
I loved it because I heard one song. I just clicked on the first song. And what I expect usually as someone who's listened to music for years and is a good producer is I thought the next song on the album would sound so different that I'd be like, oh, I really liked that one. Why don't we give me more of that? But literally, I could listen to every song and be like, I love this as much as I love the last one.
Right.
Which does it not happen usually at the like level of DIY, right? Don't you agree, Bob? You have to have a team, you know, you have had to have a team.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a beautifully cohesive sound. And it's not to and it's not to say that the songs are the same, because they're not actually.
No,
it's a very diverse and creative. And, you know, there's we were talking about the a cappella song.
I love the poem song.
Yeah, yeah, it's beautiful. We were talking about, I was telling Kilo when we were listening to it that I wanted to sample it and make a remix with it or something. But
actually, my voice into my how do you call that? My
cell phone recorder
because it was in the middle of the night and I dreamed this text. And I had not to forget it. And I woke up and I was like, oh, I think something happened last night. And that's how it came out. And that's how it was on
the beautiful.
It's funny that she talked about recording in her bed, because I was talking to my friend earlier today about like recording techniques, like vocal techniques and stuff like that. I was talking about how at the schooling that I took, they taught us like you need to know how to record in any situation, in any room, because they said, you might be on tour and end up playing a show with like Juicy J or like Adele or somebody, some big artist. And they're like, I want to collab. And you need to be able to do it in the fucking hotel room, which I've never done it in a hotel room. I've done it in a living room, in a kitchen, in a bathroom. You know, I've done vocals lots of places. But it's funny you say that, because I was talking about that earlier, saying there's a lot of albums out there that you don't even know were recorded like in a hotel room behind two mattresses. Like that definitely happens all the time.
Yeah.
And you're living proof that a whole album can be done while you're fucking pregnant. So there's no excuse watching the show. What's your excuse now? She can do it pregnant. I can't do it pregnant. That's amazing. That's amazing. So back to me not being amazed that you're the producer and now I'm shy. That's okay. I like to talk about, because I'm always curious about inspiration, right? So one thing I've talked about on this show a lot, and I will continue to, whether you guys watching it like it or not, is inspiration from internal and external sources, and the comparison of, do you get more inspired by like internal emotions and feelings or external events, circumstances such as drug use? Not that we're a fan of lots of drugs, but some drugs are fine. Alcohol use, which that's alcohol, whatever. Or is it more like, you know, oh man, I just got broken up with, or I just saw my son do his first, you know, yoga pose, or like, I don't know what kids do these days.
It's a yoga, I think.
Sure, why not? Which one, you know, or is it a mixture of the both?
It's really a mixture of. Can I answer point by point?
All the way.
Answer
anything you want.
Drugs and booze. I think the reason why I'm not a total addict, and I'm not an addict at all, actually, is because it takes me away from my creative ability. Totally. Like, it makes me, even when I had an accident, for instance, and I had to take medication, I didn't take it because I felt like I couldn't write if I was taking anything that would take me away from my regular weirdness. And external is when I write, when I'm in a community and when I write a lot and I'm on the road, I feel like I want to tell these little stories. For instance, something funny happens on the plane or on the street and I want to communicate it in my words to the audience. But that's a different kind of songs, that those songs are written very fast and it's for me to communicate usually a very sad story that I want to turn into something a bit fun or ridiculous.
Right.
But mostly my deepest songs come from my feelings, my interrogation, my feeling on the side of things, and listening to records. You listen to a record, for instance, I'm going to listen to a Black Sabbath record and look at the sleeve and then I'm going to feel like, oh my God, this music is so good. Why can't I make music so good? And it's a place of frustration almost. I don't know. I were that band and
right.
And you write your own thing because, I don't know, beauty calls for beauty, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, yeah. And, you know, a lot of that is like what Keila was saying before, how, what you put in is what you put out, you know, whether it's your stories about traveling from city to city and recording, you know, your recordings being a product of that, those travels, or, you know, as you're describing now, just like, you know, how you're living and how that manifests into your art. I think it's really interesting how these things are, that line between internal and external is actually pretty blurry. You know, you slide between the
it's
two.
It's technically a trick question because all your internal emotions are kind of dictated by some external force in some way. But don't tell the next guest that because
it's that's awesome.
Well, but the power of music you don't know how to do to me is always a very big part of my creative process.
Oh, yeah.
I love metal, for instance.
Me too.
And yeah. I never ever find a good metal band I could play with. I've tried. It never mixed the right way. So from this frustration, listening to great records and still not having access to how do they do it so good.
Right.
It keeps me writing songs that you would never guess had that for a starting point.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Me and Bob talk about that all the time. Mm-hmm. For instance, like, I write dark-ass shit that's like horror-themed trap music, but I'm a very happy person, and I'm a very enthusiastic person about life. And so you would never think that this person is the person writing those songs, you know, that seems so dark. And I was in a deathcore band. So, I mean, I always have done kind of dirty, angry, lack of a better word, let's get murdered music. And yet it comes from a very peaceful place in my heart. And it's funny that you said that because metal bands are the same way. I've toured with metal bands. I'm a drummer. I was a drummer in a metal band, no longer. But and it does. It's weird because we are the happiest bunch of people. We're super nice. Never met a metal band that I didn't get along with. And yet we write this music that's like about crazy shit. And so, yeah, you're right. It just sometimes it doesn't even match up at all.
Have you ever met a happy comedian? I haven't.
No, that's a good point.
This is true.
That's a really good point.
I've always told people that. You can't tell now, but our audience knows I'm in a wheelchair, and I've always said I want to do stand-up comedy, but I cannot stand, so I will not do that. But I've always told people, like, there's never a joke that's like the punchline is, and then we got home safely. You know, like, there's no fucking joke where the ending is a good ending.
No,
like,
fun than that,
and then we crashed our car into an ambulance. Would be the joke. Like, you don't ever tell a story of the night you went out drinking and then you got a taxi and you went home and you went to sleep and your husband was there and you were so happy. No one's going to go to that show. So you're right. Yeah. It is always usually the opposite type of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's awesome. I'll tell you one thing, Lisa, when you were talking about your writing and, you know, the your style of writing, your actual poetic style, you know, the way you actually piece the words together is something that really caught my ear really early on when I first heard music. It still does. And your song Muscle Memory of Missing You is one of that just keeps spinning in my head, that song. It's just a beautiful, beautiful song. It makes me think of my father, honestly, but lyrically it's non-specific, right? I mean, even the title and the concept of it is this sort of like this sort of like almost a mental thing and a physical thing, and it's just this innate like pain and longing for someone that you love. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I get from it anyway. That's the muscle memory is this, you know, this is just this emotion that is completely out of your control, but it's there, and it's part of you.
Right.
All right. So, but you don't say that. You say it in just this nice kind of poetic flowing muscle memory, a little bit of alliteration, the meaning can't be missed on it. It's wonderful. So I guess what I'm getting at is that, you know, a lot of your writing kind of reminds me that aspect of it reminds me of some of my favorite writers, guys, you know, like Lou Reed and Dylan and Bowie, you know, where they're not being very specific in their writing, but they're telling you a whole lot in a short little phrase of catchy words, you know? So am I right about your influences, I guess, is what I'm getting at?
Because that's right about my influences, and I'm blushing like crazy. To me, I guess I discovered writing politeness and awarefulness of others through these writers. It's like we have a common feeling, but I won't impose to you my personal story. I will try and find words that anyone can relate to, because it's the global of the thing that's interesting. Like, you're not here to watch me do my laundry. And it's these words that become more important than the feeling itself that inspired them.
Right.
That even cure the feeling itself, because then the words and the phenomenon become more important than the pain that led to them.
Right.
It's kind of a magic formula, I guess.
Right, yeah.
You repeat it. And it feels better because the process becomes more interesting than the person or than the event that provoked it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm being clear, but it's...
No, yeah, for sure.
I definitely get it.
Writers are definitely my inspiration. I think the power of words, where something can be ugly, but if you put the right words in the right order, it can become a little island of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... Right.
We were talking about that earlier today, too, about the song. That's so funny you said that. About the song called Colors by, what are they called?
Group Love.
Group Love. Group Love, right. So that song is very beautiful and pretty and fun to sing. And it is about Kurt Cobain killing himself. I think, if I'm wrong, message in the comments, everybody, that I'm not wrong. but what's super dope about that is, like, that song to me, when I hear it come on, when I'm playing a video game, I'm driving my car, I get pumped up. I get fucking excited to sing this song about this dude killing himself. And that's exactly what you're talking about, where it's like, if I think of the words, it's not a pretty island of poetry. It's a fucking shit show of death. But when the music is playing the way they wrote it, you know, I'm a man, up in the air, blah, 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 you know the song, everybody. But that just gets me so excited. And if they were just to blatantly say, and then he killed himself because drugs, then the song would not be fun.
No, that would not be fun at all.
And I had no idea what it was about. I actually saw a YouTube video that was like, this is what it's actually about. And I was like, bam. So you're dead on with that. I think the Killers do that very well. I think Group Love does. Anybody that's a good artist can. I mean, there's so many examples. Outkast did it on like their most famous song. That song's like about his parents and stuff. It's not about like what you think it's about. So many people. You're so dead on with that. That's so right.
Yeah, now I did a kilo. It's my turn.
So every episode, one of the three of us will forget all the way what the fuck we're talking about. It was me for like the first six episodes, and I did it more than once.
Getting a little bit better because
he's taking over. But we'll be thinking, we'll be like listening to the other person so intently that suddenly what we were about to say
is in our mind
right when we're about to say it. So there we go. But I remember now.
So anyway, what I was going to say basically is what you were getting at, like when you were talking with Lisa was talking about the meaning, keeping the words not specific so they don't, you know, they can take on their own meaning to the listener. And you were talking about colors. It's that notion that art ceases to belong to the artist once it's created. You know what I mean? Like it's ours up until the point that it's done. Right.
Is it really ever ours though?
Right? Well, hey, there you go.
Let's just think about that for a second.
Yeah. But if you think of it, or even if it's like, you know, like you're a chef and you're making a meal, you know, once you hand it over, you know, there you go. Enjoy the meal. And it becomes.
Right.
So it'd be, cause I remember I was in college one time, I was in this writing class in college, and there was this poem. It was called, I don't remember who wrote it. It was called The Skunking Hour. And we were supposed to, it was one of these dumb exercises where you read it and then everybody writes what they think it's about. And then then the professor's like, all right, Smith, what do you think? And I don't remember. I said, oh, I think it means this, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, wrong. And I was like, what do you mean wrong? Like, it's what it means to me. And he's like, well, that's not what the writer meant. I'm like, how do you know? You know, he didn't like this conversation.
Right.
It didn't go well for him.
Right. But no, that's so funny. They made you do that because at my schooling, we had an assignment where we had to go home and listen to Hotel California, like over and over again. And then our grade was how close we could get to the right answer of what it was about, which obviously they did end up giving us all a good grade and saying, it means whatever it wants to you. Mm-hmm. But point being, I thought it was like about drug addiction and like maybe sex addiction, stuff like that. It's about the music industry in California in the time it was written. That's all the fuck it's about.
None of that's mutually exclusive. Zero.
Right. My brain went so dark with it about this completely other thing that it did not get written about yet. I can find that meaning in it still to this day, knowing the real meaning of it. So we both had to do that shitty exercise, but I still got a good grade. So.
There you go.
Good job.
But what you just said to me just brings me back to this little sentence you slid in, which was, do the words really belong to us?
No.
Because that's a subject that really interests me. It's kind of the concept of Godspell. You know, I feel like I'm just a vector. The words that come from I don't know where travel.
You need to read the book. Sorry, I cut you off. The book on the war of art, not the art of war, but the war of art, because that's about
not to be mistaken.
Right. Do not mistake that, everybody. But that's exactly what she's talking about. She should read it. It's exactly what you're talking about, where it talks about how we are literally the thing that these ideas come to and expect us to spit them out the other end, and they come to us. And it's like this one guy talks, I think, in that book about like he's like a country musician and he's driving his truck on the highway one day and he like came up with this entire song and he says what song it is and it's a hit song. And he says like it came to me and I was on the highway and I literally pulled over and like yelled at the universe, like, you really want me to do this right now here on the side of the highway? But you're right. It's like, in my opinion, at least, when I was first becoming a producer, and I think I talked about this last episode, but I was having a hard time writing one time and I didn't know anything about making EDM or anything. And I was having a hard time. So I called my dad like in the middle of the night. I was out in the garage smoking cigarettes in like 20 degree weather being frustrated. And my dad said, do not write the song for your sake. Do not write the song for the audience's sake. Write the song for the song's sake. And write exactly what the song wants to be and needs to be, and then fuck off. It's not you. It's not yours anymore. And I think it's amazing that you're talking about this, because to be a healthy artist, Anyone listening to this right now that's struggling with this kind of stuff, don't worry. We all have. It just takes you having a layer of letting go for you to come. Some of my best songs I wrote in like a day, maybe a few hours. Right. And that's because I was in that place she's talking about where it's like, I'm no longer writing the song. The song's just happening and I'm watching it happen. And I'm like, this is cool. You know, that's amazing. Yeah. People search their whole life to find what you're talking about right now.
Right. Well, it's like the song you said you woke up and recorded in your phone.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same idea. It's an involuntary action almost. You just, you know, wake up, record it. That's how John Lennon wrote Across the Universe, by the way. In a dream.
That's amazing.
He woke up from a dream and
Well, what happened was so wild. I'm sorry, it's the mystical minute, but I have that song in my head right now, and it's been keeping me from talking to you because the words, I've been having it stuck in my head for the past 2 hours.
That's crazy.
And over and over again, and now I hear you say that, and I'm like, am I awake? Am I dead? Is it really happening?
Are you talking about Across the Universe?
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's awesome.
It's so weird.
Wait, you want another little weird bit of synchronicity here? You've got Paul Simon behind you, and I'm wearing Paul Simon's lyrics on my shirt.
Even crazier, everybody. I literally talked to my friend about synchronicity an hour ago. I was walking my dog on the phone, talking about, you know, when things are just. What is that word? And I had to think of the exact word that you just said. We did not script this, everybody, by the way.
There you go.
In our other episodes, we're not a magic show, even though it seems like it right now.
No, we hope you're enjoying the first episode of the Carl Jung Book Club. And we're all talking about Carl Jung.
We'll be doing our magic tricks shortly.
Yeah, right.
That's amazing. But no, synchronicity is also a crazy thing that really helps me write. I'll be like thinking of a song and a sound that I heard and I'm thinking it's awesome. And then I open like Ableton and put like Massive on the channel and just flip to a random sound. And it's that sound. I'm like, shit, now I have to write a song. Now there's no options. You know, I don't know. It's part of my inspirational process, I think.
That's excellent. Well, Lisa, now, how do we top that? How do we top all these random occurrences that just happened to us?
Why don't we talk about Glass of Blood? Why don't we talk about how you worked on that album? I want to know about the reverb, but we'll talk about that another time. How did you come up with the title? Why these songs that you put into the album and so on? So
the title of the album is something really, really, really organic and natural. It started like 15 years back. Every time I was hitting a hard time, maybe falling in the street or falling in life, I started hearing in my head, yes, I could use a glass of blood. It was like,
oh, that's cool.
The very phrase that came to the feeling of I was in need of something to bring me back to life. I'm vegan. I don't know if you know that, but it's pretty ironic.
Bob is vegan. I am. Yeah. I'll eat all the meat for you guys. So you don't eat it, so I can have it all. Don't worry.
But I started writing it and writing it again and again. And I even had an exhibition in Paris where I was just, all I did was drawing postcards with written, yes, I could use a glass of blood on it.
That's cool.
And I felt like this was a song waiting to happen, but I wouldn't force it. So it started 15 years ago and the song came out last year. I never wrote it before. I was like, one day this will be a song, but I'm just going to wait for it to happen.
That's awesome.
And well, I'm very, the imagery of blood and moonlight and shadows and ghost pirate boats, all of that is what lives in my mind. So
that's great. We are kindred spirits. Don't worry.
Yeah.
We are. And we're not weird. Don't worry, guys. We're cool. So what made you choose those songs to put on the, like, you know, because as an artist myself, like when I make an album, which Bob has been quoted as saying one time to me, or more than once, I write albums like other people write singles. I'll write a full album out of nowhere and he'll be like, why the fuck did you now have a new album? You know,
it's but true.
What I know as an artist that when you do that, you eventually have to go through a cutting period where you're like, I do not want this in this album. Or also I'll hear a song from 4 years ago and be like, I want this on this album. I've done that. So what compiled this whole album together? Or did you write it all at once, maybe?
Well, actually, this one is a pretty special one because I didn't play music, sing, record music, or listen to any single song for a huge period of time, for maybe 5 years. Something happened in my physical life that made me unable to do any kind of music. So I wouldn't want to listen to any kind of music because it was too painful. I was just making myself some hours of recordings of white noise with machines, with my vacuum cleaner or the rain. And I would listen to that on repeat all night long. But I wouldn't want to listen to one song. It was too painful because I thought I knew that never again would I be on a stage or would I perform. And then one day, a song happened. I was still in the same.
Sorry. That was a good way of putting it.
I was in the same physical predicament, but my guitar that was full of dust on the side of my living room was there. I didn't even dare look at it, but the song Janet.
That's the one I like. That's the one I like the most.
Oh, yeah?
Yes,
well, it flew. I had to grab my guitar, and it took me the exact length of the song to write it. It just kept flowing through my hands and voice. And when I heard my voice, it was like, you know, these videos of puppies that bark for the first time and they don't even know what happens.
Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah. That's great.
And then I was like, dare I hope that one day I will write, record, and edit a song that will be listened by maybe three strangers. That was my only prayer. And that was my only goal throughout this record. So I was like, if I do one last record or one last song, it has to be like the portrait of Dorian Gray version of myself.
Right.
It has to look exactly like me. It has to be my testament record. You don't know me. You want to know me? Listen to that record. That's me made in record. And well, the record happened, and there's old songs that I had written before and that I thought would never see the light of day. And there's new songs that happened after that accident that just proved me that, yes, you could be a different physical being, but still write songs. And so it's pretty... It's like a first record, a last record, the beginning of a cycle, the end of a cycle. I don't know. It's a lot of things put into one record.
It's crazy you told that story, because that's another thing that makes us kindred spirits, because I don't know. It was 3 years ago, I think now. I'm not sure. It was a while back. I got necrotizing pneumonia and my body was septic and I had a blood sugar of like 500 or more. And my temperature was 92. And I woke up a few days later in the ICU, right? And I almost died. They had to remove part of my lung. I didn't think I'd ever move again, the amount that I do move. And so I did the same thing. I did not touch my fucking computer for 2 years or more. I was like, I won't touch it. I'm not going to do shit. I'm not going to write anything until I am not in a place like this anymore. So I had to detox off of painkillers because I don't like them and I didn't want to be on them. But obviously, if you have part of your lung removed, you have to be on strong painkillers. And it's a big mess. It took me over a year to get off of them. And then I had to get off other drugs. Anyways, I did not want to be in that state of mind when I wrote music. I did not want to write music that would remind me of that pain almost, for lack of a better way to explain it to everybody. And so that's true. I admire that you respected your craft enough to say, I'm going through this right now and I fuck music. I'm not going to do it no matter what. And I mean, that's where my brand really started, like where I went from being just like a mediocre EDM artist to writing music that like someday people will be copying what I'm doing now. And it took me going away. And I even had like a friend come live with me in California that I used to live in the house in Oklahoma with, because he was helping me like get off the methadone and stuff, because I was like, fuck this, I don't want to be on it. And he was like, let's work on music, because he's like an amazing musician that can like play the drums. There's a video on YouTube of him playing a song on the keyboard and playing the drums at the same time. And I was just like, this guy's it blows my mind, but he really wanted to work on music and just have fun. And I did not. I wanted to sit in my misery, remember my misery, and not participate in that music thing, you know? So, I mean, that's cool that you did the same thing. Some people do right in those times. I'm not saying it's wrong, by the way. Anybody out there, anything we say, you don't have to do what we did. If you find yourself in the same situation as we did, just know we became successful through it. But right. You don't have, once again, you don't have to give yourself pneumonia to be a successful artist. You know, you don't have to have a health problem. No. But it's cool to hear another person with so many similar stories to my own, which I obviously, everyone kind of thinks I'm a unique Pokemon, you know, like my friend who's dead used to say to me that I was a unique Pokemon. We're not fucking unique Pokemon. Did I think that I would meet a French artist today that has a lot of similar stories to me and how they ended up with their awesome sound? No, but they're out there. You're not a unique Pokemon. Sorry if your parents told you you were, kids.
Well,
you're not.
You know, you're alluding to yet another Paul Simon lyric, oddly enough. I am a rock. I am an island. That's the whole idea. So,
right.
Man exactly. Claims to be a man, an island unto himself. But really, he is not. No one is. We're all in this.
But I mean, yeah, that's so funny that you say that, because it's just like, and you're right, because I live in chronic pain a lot of the time. And my dad and me love listening to music. We'll listen to fucking anything and make fun of it if it sucks. Enjoy it if it's good. You know, and he'll come over my house for dinner or whatever. I'll be in pain and he'll be like, let's listen to music. I'll be like, fuck music. I literally, like, my physical being is like, no to music. Bob doesn't know this story, but like now everybody does. You know, sometimes there are moments where you just do, you, even though that's your passion, that's your career, that's, you know, what drives you through life, you're like, I can't do it right now. And I admire that you had the wherewithal, if I'm using that word that I'm saying wrong correctly.
Close enough. Wherewithal.
Wherewith, whatever, that word. Wear your clothes, whatever. You know, that you had that word to say, I'm not going to write music right now. And you thought maybe you'd never write music again, which I also felt the same way. But I think the amazingness of the new album that I just think is great came probably from that exact choice of if it happens, it happens. It's probably never going to happen. And then it did. And look, you're being interviewed on our podcast, mm-hmm. You know.
There you go. Well, and you're right.
Today, you said you want three random strangers.
Yeah.
I don't have a third. I'm sorry. But my parents, both of them listened to it.
There with you go. Me There's four random strangers.
So you got four today alone, random strangers that thought your music was amazing. So dream big, come true, kid.
There you go.
Just dream big. They do come true.
And I think that's an excellent point. And you mentioned random strangers and made me think, Hilo, that, you know, we're closing on the hour and we have to make sure we get in our random questions.
Sure. But first, like we've done in every other episode, after we say, please like and subscribe to all our shit, because we have to say that. No, really, we do want you to, so you don't miss out on the cool people that we've interviewed in the past and the cool people we're interviewing now. And remember to leave in the comments artists that you might want us to talk about. Also, since we're getting to the random question part of the show, leave a comment saying like a random question you might want to hear the next artist answer, and we will decide if you are smart or not. Good. Now, on to what I was going to say. At this point in the show, we'd like to say, is there anything else you would like to say? anything at all. You can talk about Rain or anything you want. This is the part of the show where the artist that we're interviewing gets to talk about whatever the fuck they want. Who cares?
Well, I'm not going to be very original, but I'm going to ask you guys, because I wonder, as there's so many similarities. So that's not my random question. It's just...
Okay, okay.
You're just going to interview us for a moment.
Yeah, sure.
If you see this record behind me, which is a soundtrack for a movie called... Let me show you. Whoops! Daughters of Darkness by French artist François de Roubaix.
Okay. I never heard of that.
Well, man, I was wondering if people in the US music aficionados were listening to it. He's my dream guy in music. He made mostly movie scores, almost only movie scores, and children movies, adult movies. This one is a horror movie. And that's his awesome. Music and his composing process is my ideal.
That's awesome.
François de Roubaix, he died at a young age diving in the sea. I mean, how do you call that? Scuba diving?
Scuba diving.
Yeah, scuba diving. He was in the 70s, and you should check him out. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Hey,
I
the
record what? This morning when I woke up.
What's
and was wondering if... It was popular on the other side of the ocean.
What, Bob, have you heard of him? I have not.
No, I have not, but I'm going to definitely look it up now. Absolutely.
But no, I love composers. Someday I will be a composer, I promise. My manager works in movies and stuff, and he's like, oh, he's in my new music video that's coming out this month. But I love trying to make imagery with my music, and I think it'd be dope to be able to do what he got to do and what a lot of people do, which is have an image in front of you and then write the music and try to capture that into music. That's dope.
Yeah,
I love shit like that. Love it. That was a great thing to say at the end, by the way, because we never have people actually give a shit what's happening where we're at. No, I'm not saying, I'm just saying usually it's like, follow me on Instagram. No, I don't think we've
got right. that. Right, yeah.
I don't think we've had that happen. I'm just joking, I promise. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm not. I don't know. Maybe. Anyways, now we have come to everyone's favorite part of the show. Okay, maybe not everyone, but my favorite part of the show. Where where one of us, of your hosts today, will ask a industry-related random question, and one of us will ask a absolutely insane, stupid random question, like, what is your favorite color sock to wear and why? This question has not been used yet, but I will probably use it someday. So, without further ado, I think Bob is going to start us off today with the... and she gets to ask a question.
Yes.
And we all have to answer, including our own questions. So, right. If you're going to ask something crazy... You got to remember, you got to answer it. That's why the game is played. So,
exactly.
Go right ahead, Bob.
Okay. So, Akil and I, you and I talked about, I think this is the one I said I was going to ask. So,
the industry one.
Right. Well, when we were listening to your album earlier, Lisa, one thing.
Why are you giving away our work process, sir? No, I'm just kidding.
No, we were listening. One thing that Kilo brought up, and I agreed with, and I would like to know the answer to as well, is how did the song titles come about on your record? Because if anyone were to look at the credits on the record, you'd see that the song titles themselves are like little mini stories.
Right.
You know, they're literative, you know.
So for the audience, he's asking each of us to answer, how do you come up with the titles of
that's
song?
Right, we all have to answer this question, so right. It's not specifically not just your
I'm just making sure they know that we're not baiting her into answering something that we're not going to answer.
But anyway, I made it your song titles made us think of that.
No. Interesting question. They're actually the very condensed version of the song.
Okay.
It could be the start of the song. It's the idea resumed idea of the song. Mm-hmm. And it also gives a more precise color to the album. The artwork, the title of the album, the topic, the videos all give you a window to my personal imagery.
Right.
And I like it when every single component of the record gives you a more precise idea of the color of the record. Yep. Everything is supposed to strengthen the rest. I like a precise concept, which it's weird because it's very full of myselfy because the concept was myself.
Yeah, so but it's
keywords to know what I like and what I'm like.
Right on.
Yep.
Well, cool. Excellent answer.
Once again, she kind of answered it for me because we are apparently the same human being. So I agree with her completely.
More than you know. More than you know.
There you go.
Exactly. We are one mind. Whatever. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree with her. And I do the same thing. I think that the name of my songs are kind of the concept behind the song. And in some instances, it's a little different. Sometimes I use like quotes from the song, right? Because I put a lot of movie samples in my songs, as my fans that are listening know. Sometimes, you know, for instance, like I did a song recently. My last release was a song called Halloween that came out for Halloween. And it had Halloween movie sound bites in. So obviously that song's going to be called Halloween. One of my next singles that's going to come out is called Ghostface, because it's based on like the Scream movie.
Right.
But also to what she was saying about kind of what is inside her coloring the album, because of me having synesthesia where I kind of see things when I hear music, that also helps with the names. For instance, like my song Hits that's on my album Ruthless. The song Hits is kind of about when I went through a very rough and destructive breakup, right? And so I decided to go to my uncle's house and drink away some of my tears sometime that night. And then I went home and I heard a Rocky quote. I think it may be actually from the movie that Sylvester Stallone did with the other fighter, and he's not the fighter, called, what is that?
It's Creed. Creed.
Yeah, right. Get so it. I heard.
I'm sorry I have to interrupt you because of the synchronicity, but do you know the name of my son? No, you don't. He's called Jacob Balboa.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Synchronicity. It's the episode synchronicity.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So the name of the song has nothing to do with being from that movie, even though it does because it's right. Hit. But it's like that song was me telling myself to get over it.
Right.
I'm not going to cry. That's why I wear sunglasses. Don't worry, guys. You've heard me say that before. But it came from like me taking a few blows in life that I did not expect I was going to get. So yeah, you're right. I mean, my song Sacrifice, the song was written by Tay Hero, who's going to be on our podcast soon. And it was kind of about my life, which is funny story. We're in the studio. I know I'm taking up all our time. We're in the studio and he's writing all these lyrics and he's kind of going over and he's recording and I start tearing up because I'm a big baby and I think I'm just a big baby. And so I'm like, you know, bro, this song is great. It's making me tear up. And he's like, bro, this song is about your life. And I was like, well, fuck. So the song Sacrifice, the name Sacrifice because of all the sacrifices I went through. So yeah, I am answering it with her exactly the same way. Good job. Well, what about you, Bob?
What about me? Well, it depends, because one or two people know I make a couple different, I sometimes make instrumental music and sometimes I sing. And so when I'm making I make a lot of instrumental music. And when I do that as in both cases, I sort of start from improvisation and build outwardly. So I come up with a riff, I come up with a word, a phrase, and just kind of play with it and beat around until it becomes a song. So, right. So the thing actually kind of grows naturally. So by the time I'm at the, you know, I've got a title. I probably have had four titles that have just kind of morphed into
Me too. I'm not going to lie about that. Yeah. That definitely happens all the time.
Yeah. But then they're directed, but especially like the instrumentals become a sound of something, usually somewhere physical that I've been, you know, like a beach or things like that. So anyway, that's.
Oh yeah. Like that one song, Low Tide Funk.
That's the one. Yes. There you go. Low Tide Funk is a great example. Yes. Yeah. There you go. So Kilo,
my turn to
you. Yeah. You have to ask a question.
I answered the question.
No, you have to ask a question.
Yes, sir. I want to know by all of the above panel, if you had to describe your outward aesthetic, meaning the way you dress, the way you look, your style with a song title, what would the song title be and why is that your answer?
That's good. It's a pretty wild question, man. Right on.
Dude, I don't know. Well, no, yes, I do know.
Yes, you do.
Because the world gave it to me right here. One Trick Pony.
That's
a very good one.
That definitely is the correct answer.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. That's a wonderful answer.
Greatest answer ever. Perfect. But you have to answer the why part of the question as well.
There's two parts to my why. If you know a bit of my art and myself, I'm obsessed with horses and ponies. I use them in my songs, in my art, in life. All I want to do is I'm the girl who's in the car is always oh, horses, can I pet them? And you have to park on the side of the road, and I have to go pet the horse. And also because I don't know if it happens to you, but I feel like if you're on a date or if you're meeting someone for the first time and you're starting telling your same life stories and people are like, oh, you're amazing. And I'm like, yeah, but what's going to happen once you get past the few life stories that are amazing and there's just me remaining?
There you go.
After a while, you feel like, oh no, here I am telling this story again. And it's amazing. But then what happens next?
Exactly. Yes. Dude, I love where she took that question, Bob. So let's take it the way she took it. Because me and Bob always say, when people say, what do you mean by that with the questions? Mm-hmm. We say, whatever you think it means. So my question was super fucking shallow, like a dumbass. It was just about like what you wear and how you dress. But she gave us such a better answer of you as a human being that I would love to have you answer it that way as well.
Oh gosh. Wow.
I know, she just opened this shit up.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know what I mean? Like there are song titles that I wish I was as a human being, you know, maybe something cool like Lowrider or something like that.
Mine is not cool. Don't worry.
But I mean, you know, I'll stick with the low theme. I'll say that because you mentioned it, and it's one of my songs, that it's a song of mine that Kilo is remixing and mastering right now. And it's called it's an instrumental, and it's called Low Tide Funk. Low Tide Funk. So I'll say that's my vibe.
You're going to use your own song. That's a G fucking move right there, bro.
Right on.
Holy shit. You just plugged your own song and you answered the question at the same time.
And I made myself sound pretty cool because Low Tide Funk sounds pretty cool.
No, right? But if any of you know the Static Dive, you know that is not an exaggeration. Trying to be cool. So when I originally came up with this question, I was like, shit, I'm a dumbass because I don't even know my own answer to it. Right? So after 2 seconds of looking in the mirror, because I had such a shallow question, I decided it would be the song Paint It Black. But I'm not using that as my answer because obviously I wear black all the time. It ended up black, and I'm not going to wear it. It just doesn't feel right on my skin. I guess the coloring bothers my vampire skin, whatever. Yeah,
but, you know, the song Painted Black has got a lot of kind of deeper psychological meaning
But
to
see,
it
the question had nothing to do with anything deep, you guys. It was like the name of the song related to how you look, which I'm now going to answer what our question has evolved into with one last synchronicity for today's episode. It may never happen again. We were talking about it earlier, and I'm not sure why. Is that song Hello Darkness, My Old Friend, or what's that song called?
It's the sounds of silence. It's the shirt. Okay, well,
then that right doesn't now work because it's a lyric from the fucking song. Shit. Then I don't. Oh, I know. All the way fucking no. The answer to the wonderfulness that the question has become. No more synchronicity, but it's a great answer. It's the song Energy by Dre, right? Because I am a bundle of energy that sometimes people cannot handle. And I know this about myself. I'm the dude that can stay up the rest of the night playing a video game and I'll talk to you the same energy level in the morning. I consume a million energy drinks a day. I drink pre-workout for fun. My drug of choice is caffeine all the way. Never turn away from it. So Energy by Drake. That is for sure.
Well, all right. Cool, man.
So before we go, you guys, you need to check out her album.
Well, what? Wait, but doesn't Lisa get to ask a question?
Oh, shit. I forgot. Yeah. Good job, Bob. We forgot on Joel's episode, but we're back.
Okay. My question is not going to be very romantic, but...
Was mine romantic?
Well, I made it romantic.
Oh, well, there you go.
You did. It was supposed to be shallow, but you got me.
I dare you to make this one romantic.
I'll do it.
What is your favorite tool? Because I love tools, you know, like actual tools you use to build things and break things. And I'm always on the lookout for a great tool I wouldn't know about, maybe related to music or bicycles or...
Oh, that's a great question.
House construction, whatever.
I do love that question. Go ahead, Bob, because I have to think of mine. I know what it is, but I don't know what it is.
Okay. Well, I'll just say really very, a very sort of geeky and literal answer to your question without getting any kind of deep at all. I am a dork. I like tools a lot, nerdy little tools, soldering irons and things. But a great one that is a little odd is a Dremel. If you do any kind of work on like guitars, for instance, like I've got a couple of guitars here where I've had to put new pickups in and stuff like that. A Dremel is great. You just kind of bore it out and pop your stuff.
That's awesome.
It's so cool.
There you go. That's my answer.
My answer is going to be completely stupid because it's the truth. One funny thing about my family is we think everything is a hammer. So I'm going to be deep now and encourage everyone that everything is a hammer. Literally, I don't think I own a nice toolbox. You know, whenever I move into a new place, I upgrade my toolbox. I have new tools. I have battery starters for cars that are like handheld. I mean, I got everything. Don't got a fucking hammer because anything is a hammer when you need it to be. This microphone is a hammer. So my favorite tool is using this microphone as a hammer. Or anything that you have in hand can smack a wall. It's a hammer. Your turn.
Yeah, Lisa, you have to answer your own question now.
Well, mine is so lame. I didn't know I would have to answer it, actually.
Mine is not a hammer. I think
I could be lying. Well, actually, I'm sorry because it's going to sound like I'm milking it, the synchronicity thing. But I have a hammer I use as a teddy bear, which is a real hammer. It's my favorite object. And
so you have my object as a pet, and mine does not exist in my apartment. It's perfect.
But the proof that I wasn't just milking it is I put out a song with a DJ Gilbert, who's a famous French artist. And when I talk about this hammer and the fact that I'm sleeping with it, and I always have it under my pillow just in case I would need to get into a fight in the middle of the night.
That's awesome. That's hilarious.
Yeah. But I love hammers. I love hammering stuff. And I had another tool in mind, but then I was like, but that wouldn't be the honest answer because really I sleep with a hammer. So it makes it my favorite.
So you love hammers so much you sleep with it, and I don't even own a hammer. So it's like synchronicity to the level of no more it literally flipped it. That's great. I'm glad I answered it honestly, and I'm glad you answered it honestly, because if either of us lied about our honest answer that had nothing to do with the question, it would have just ended it. I could have made up some cool tool that I have and been like, so awesome. But truthfully, mine was hammers exist everywhere.
That's wonderful.
That's awesome. So before you guys click off of our video, please, Go listen to her album, Glass of Blood. It's out everywhere and it's wonderful. And Bob, your new song will probably be out by the time this comes out, right?
By the time this is out, Zen Seeds will have been out for a couple of weeks at least.
Yeah, so go listen to Zen Seeds by the Static Dive and go watch on our channel.
Yes, it will have. And I just want to say, Lisa Leland, thank you very much, so much for coming on.
Oh, for sure. I was going to say all that after the plug. Don't worry. I'm not forgetting to thank her for coming and telling me that she's the great producer behind that album.
There you go. I'm
glad to know that I have now, because I even told my friend that I was talking to on the phone that I talked to about Sing Nizzy. I was like, I want to talk to that producer because they did a wonderful job for her, because I just, like every other stupid person out there, I thought that it was like a huge, big budget album that, because of the way it sounds, how perfect it sounds. So great. Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's okay. I cut you off.
The last thing I was going to say is go watch my video, Travelers. It's on our channel, whatever. Doesn't matter. Thank you for being here. Thank you for putting up with your life difficulties and still coming back and being an artist, because that album probably would not have been the same if you were in a different state of mind.
Well, merci for having me. And just a last shout out to my actual producer, because even if we do everything together, I'd be nothing without his brilliant mind and hands, which is Guillaume Leglise, this poetic name. You should check him out. He's good.
For sure. He's great.
Very humble.
It was great.
All right, guys.
So much fun having
guys.
You.
That was really fun.
Thank you for all the synchronicity and the Hammer story. Now I know I'm not the only weird person about Hammer.
All right, there you go. So goodbye from New York, LA, and Paris. Adios, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, let's take a minute.